For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league. A slightly different week this week. We got clubs about to win titles, of course we've got clubs securing playoffs. Our feature this week is really all about the love for the beautiful game. And the beautiful game at the level that we all enjoy. As the two Bury Football Club factions seek to once again come together, we speak with a half currently with a ground but no club. Not the non-league experience, nor effectively a team support just yet, week in, week out. But it does seem a sharing of their values that are important to non-league. They think in the right way. And it's important for this historic club to come together, to join with the Bury AFC that have been doing so well since their Phoenix club was formed. And it's important that there's been discussions, there's been a meeting of minds. Not everything's ever going to be resolved, but they are looking to have a vote between their two memberships to maybe bring the club together, get them playing back at Gig Lane next season, and hopefully build future chapters of a Bury Football Club. With non-league day also just around the corner, we speak to a man on the inside, a veteran groundhopper, a season ticket holder at Chelsea, but he's also one of non-league's finest ambassadors and an advocate from all the work that he puts in organising and promoting non-league day. So it is great to get to speak to Ian Bailey and finally put a voice to that name. John Couch provides the weekly roundup from Non-League Towers and tells us what we can expect to read in this weekend's Non-League paper, and there's plenty on the agenda too. So sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So the Bury situation, I have to admit, it's one I've dipped in and out of, but it's such a complicated political situation. It needs time to understand, time to balance the issues. But this week, the two sides, the old Bury FC, who have the rights to use the traditional Bury FC stadium at Gig Lane, and Bury AFC, who are the side with a place in the football pyramid playing in the Northwest Counties Premier, announced this week that they're going to hold a second attempt at an amalgamation vote in the coming weeks to see whether the two sides can come together with the idea of getting senior football back on at Gig Lane. It is a complicated thing, but let's find out more from longtime Bury FC fan and spokesperson for the Bury FC Supporters Club, Math Pickup. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Math.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to get you on, Math, because as I say, it's complicated. First up, I mean, is that a fair summation of where the two parties are now and where they want to head?
Yes. So, I mean, there's been talks ongoing for a while, but in recent weeks and the last couple of months, they've really kind of been progressing to get us to the stage where we are at now, which is hopefully to launch a second amalgamation vote as soon as we can, and hopefully, all being well, get that vote across the line, and so we can all come together and start looking forward towards a very, very positive future together.
Yeah, and there was this second. This is going to be the second vote, the one in October last year. It didn't go through. So why was that? What's changed now? Is it just time and people were having time for it to sink in?
Yeah, I think there are a number of things. It's fair to say that on the side of Bury AFC, they got it well and truly over the line with 94% of their members voting in favour for it. Yeah. On our side, the Bury AFC Supporters Society side, we needed two-thirds, i.e. 66.66%, but we only got 63%. So we were very narrowly short. I think there are a number of reasons for it. Perhaps a lack of clarity as to what it would mean. Perhaps there are a few finer points that needed sort of clarifying in terms of what the team would, you know, the makeup of the team, the makeup of the board, those sorts of things. And unfortunately, there has been division between the two sides, which has kind of grown over the last couple of years. But we're really hoping that can end, that this amalgamation when it happens, can be the start of, you know, the division ending, becoming United again, and like I say, looking forward.
Yeah, and of course it's going to be controversial. My own club, Hazen Yedding United, was formed in 2007 amid much controversy from some disillusioned fans. There were two rival clubs that were sort of a mile and a half apart,
right,
that suddenly came together. And 16 years on, there's still a bit of banter, and I don't think anybody truly thinks it was the wrong thing. And the same summer, Solihull Borough and Moor Green merged in similar circumstances. As Solihull Moors now, they've gone from strength to strength.
So right.
As a selling point, surely this is just the best option for all fans of both sides, but also football.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are, you know, there's two kind of ways I'm looking at it and wanting to sell it to our fan base, which is that if it doesn't go through, then, you know, for both sides, our society and the AFC, the future won't be as bright, and, you know, there are real risks involved. Mm. However, more pertinently, I would say that if it does happen, then we were looking at, you know, such a really bright future, and like you say, you know, the fan base being reunited, and, you know, we've got access to government funding and other funding that will put us in really good shape for the future. You know, an increased fan base. I think there'll be a lot of increased interest from local people who aren't necessarily fans at the moment, but I think they would definitely come on board. And, you know, it's a footballing story, on a bigger scale. I think it would be an incredible story. So I just think that it's such a positive thing that can happen here.
And it is weird, isn't it? The world at the moment does seem so much about division, whereas actually, you know, we're never going to agree on everything. I mean, even in my house, sometimes I just bow and nod and agree with what everybody else has said. Because sometimes, particularly when it's a passionate subject, if anybody's ever tried to organise a wedding, a funeral, a birthday party, no one ever agrees on everything. And football is as passionate as anything else. So we're not all going to be happy with every point, every part of it. But it is that choice of, well, do you want to just survive or do you want to thrive?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's something we've said. You know, we don't just want to survive on either side. We want to thrive. And the way to do that is to come together. You know, you're right about these things that you're never going to get complete agreement on absolutely every point. And that's just totally unrealistic in every circumstance, be that, you know, kind of normal circumstances like you mentioned or footballing circumstances. You know, If you've got a team that hasn't been through everything that the Bury fan base has been through, but, you know, some sections of the fan base might want more investment in the team, or they might want the manager to be sacked, or some might want them to stay, some might want like a certain player, others might not. So, you know, you're never going to agree on everything. It's just it's been much, you know, a bit more stark in our kind of situation. But fundamentally, the vast majority of the fan base wants this to happen. Other outside agencies and organisations who have been supporting us and had an interest in us, they want it to happen. So it just needs to happen, and you know, everything will be so much rosier.
And yeah, and I don't want to, you know, it's a vote, so everybody have an open vote. I don't want to persuade anybody, but it's almost a no-brainer, because as you mentioned there, if the amalgamation comes about, there's an agreement of something like £1 to £2 million in funding available to the club, but only if that amalgamation takes place.
Yeah, that's correct. So we've already been on our side, very fortunate and delighted to have help from the government and our local MP in terms of accessing something from the Community Ownership Fund, which has allowed us to both get the ground and continue to renovate it. But to access, you know, the rest of that fund, there needs to be the amalgamation. In order to get financial support from our local council, Bury Council, we need the amalgamation to go through. And there are other, you know, funds that we can access, but you know, it really is contingent on that amalgamation. And also, you know, I don't know, local businessmen, local businesses wanting to buy into it, wanting to be part of it. That's only likely to happen if there is a merger. You know, if it's another no vote and you know, there is that split, that's not as appetizing a thing for people to want to get involved with. So yeah, if it does happen, then the financial, you know, the financial things that are available for us are really, really exciting. And so, yeah, so it's just yet another reason, you know, even when you're judging it with your head as well as your heart, that it's something that, you know, you've got to take into serious consideration.
Yeah, and I look back at Man City inheriting what was originally the base for the Commonwealth Games as their new stadium. And as much as they've had external investment since, it has obviously helped there. Having that facility and bringing everybody back together sort of nearer to the actual heart of the city, that was a massive change in their fortunes.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, these things happen, and I'm sure there would have been some at that time who were sad to see Main Road go and that being their spiritual home and something. But sometimes these things, you know, kind of have to happen. We're looking, I mean, we're hoping that we can kind of restart this for Bury Football Club at Gig Lane, you know, our spiritual home where we've got so many happy and amazing memories. I mean, in the years to come, if it's decided that the facility isn't up to scratch and we're not able to make as much of it as we possibly can, then that will be a decision for the board, you know, well down the line in a few years as to moving to a more, you know, accessible facility that can be used throughout the week and everything. But at the moment, we want to try and do that for Gig Lane as much as possible as we can now. So we have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, and you know, we are the Non-League Football Show, and say technically, I guess you're from the other side. Have you been to see Bury AFC play since they formed?
Yes, I have been. I went last year with my brother and a few of the other guys. Obviously, they've got a very decent fan base of about 1,100 to 1,300 fans who've been following them. They've been doing really well. They won the Division 1 last year. Now they're obviously, like you say, in the North West Counties Premier Division and pushing for another promotion. They've got lots of games in hand, which you know, they're hoping to try and win as many of them as possible. So they've done a really good job. And so, you know, it'll be good to try and bring the positive energy from that together with everything that we've been doing with our wonderful volunteers and all the renovation work at Gig Lane, bringing all that positivity together to drive forward.
Yeah. And what's that been like for you, though, you know, being a Bury FC fan, trying to keep that passion for a club that, to all intents and purposes, really is just the community that's keeping that football club alive? Are you just keeping yourself busy and trying to sort of do strategic things as a fan?
Yeah, so, you know, it's not easy. You know, I kind of became actively involved with this in May 2021. And so we've been working so hard to get this done, and we're really pleased with everything we've achieved so far, getting the ground in, you know, that's been the main thing, and the various ways in which the community are already using the facility. But there's so much more to come. And, you know, it has been a difficult time. 2019, when we were expelled from the EFL, was such an awful time for us, for the, you know, for the fan base, for the community, for the town as a whole. It really was tough, and it has been a tough time. But now there is an opportunity to come back together and to have, you know, this bright future, as I keep saying.
And most of our listeners will know, yeah, the story from 2019, and the non-league fans won't necessarily know the full history of Bury FC. And what, only 25 years ago, you were playing in the second tier of the English pyramid, so Div 1 back then, Championship in the modern era, and playing sides like Man City.
On Valentine's Day 1998, I was in the away end with Bury fans at Man City v Bury. We won 1-0, a Paul Butler goal, and we ended up staying up in that season in what's now the Championship, and they got relegated to League One, Division One, Division Two as it was then. So yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing how things can change. You know, a bit more recently, we've played sides like Brentford and Bournemouth in League Two, and we've been, you know, I remember Bournemouth. They were close to going bust or getting relegated. They'd had points deductions. And we were up at the other end of the end of the table, and we were feeling sorry for them. So it's just amazing how things can happen. And it shows what mismanagement of football can do, and you know, the devastating effects of it. And that's why fan involvement and, you know, having at least 50+1% of fan ownership for a club is really vital.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, that The best times at Bury, I guess. That was a whole generation ago. And I guess, really, the only way to engage the latest generation, the new generation, is bringing this collaboration about, uniting this family, uniting the community, and uniting the dream as well.
Yeah,
of Bury FC.
It is, absolutely. And that's what we want to sell. I mean, I say this sell, it should be an easy sell to want to, you know, show that there can be more of these amazing, amazing moments and memories to build. My brother put together a really good YouTube video clip that we've been sharing of, you know, the various things. I mean, footage that we've been able to get from the 80s and the 70s and before, and then, yeah, during that such a successful period in the 90s. And then, you know, even recent promotions that we've had. There's so many wonderful things to look back on, but it should get us excited for what there can be, you know, amazing memories to make in the future.
Yeah, and you mentioned there about, you know, whether Gig Lane is sustainable. Is Gig Lane sustainable at the level that Bury AFC are playing at the moment, or maybe if they get promoted? It can a non-league club afford to play Gig Lane?
You know, it will be a bit different for a non-league club at that level to have such a huge stadium and facility. But we've got a good business plan in place. We've got people who've got experience in these things. We've got loads of expertise to call upon, and we're confident that it can work at that level, and that it would be something that's attractive to people to come and watch, but also for players and managers and whatever, you know, going forwards to want to come and be part of and play at and you know, and really be really involved with a Bury FC at Gig Lane, which should be a really attractive prospect.
Oh, and what about this vote then? So it's going to... The two sides, the memberships are going to vote on it. Is it too late for people to get involved? How can they get involved?
On AFC's side, their membership's closed just at the moment. I'm not sure whether that will reopen. Our own membership is still open, so you can go onto our website, Bury FC Supporters Society website, to see about joining up there for an annual membership. And then obviously if you become a member, then you can vote. So that's how you can do it. Or, you know, if you don't want to sign up for that and pay, but there's other ways. You know, if you're local, you can volunteer, help out at the ground, help out in different ways. But there's loads of information on our website, so I'd encourage people to go there and have a look and see what they think and see how they feel they can get involved.
And it's important as well that the people that are in the local area, you know, get along to different events from the two sides and get to meet other people as well. Because, you know, we always talk about the non-league family, but there's a Bury family as well, isn't it? And that's how...
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it is a shame some of the, you know, the division that I've spoken about, but I really don't want to dwell on that. I want to dwell on, like you say, the Bury family. You know, we for years we were side by side watching our beloved Jacobs, and that's what we want to see again. And, you know, as with all families, we want new members of the family. We want people who've never tried it before, who've maybe sort of stayed away for various reasons, or you know, perhaps, as often happens, some people, they might have Man City or Man United or Liverpool as, you know, local, the team that they principally support, but maybe they don't get to matches. Those sorts of fans are so welcome to come down and make Bury, you know, a team that they can support. You know, I was going to say second team, but maybe even their first team.
Yeah, and of course we've got Non-League Day coming up in a couple of weekends' time again. You know, it's how we try and engage people with non-league football and understand, you know, that it's a different game in a way to the pro game, but for all the right reasons. And again, engaging people. I mean, going forward, what is the ideal dream from of both sides discussed? Maybe a name change, or is that further down the line? You want this amalgamation first, so you can move forward.
I mean, we're hopeful, we're optimistic that the name can be changed back to Bury FC in time for the new season. Obviously, various things have to happen. Principally the FA's agreement. But, you know, we think that would make this story sort of complete and would be so beneficial to try and get everyone together. So that's what we want. And obviously, in terms of a long-term plan, we want to be sustainable. Obviously, we feel, well, some of us, I'm sure a lot of us, feel that, you know, we were treated badly by the ESL. And whilst we want to get back to somewhere near that level, we don't want to do that at any cost. We've been through such hard times as a result of financial mismanagement. We don't want to experience that again. So the dream is to live within our means, create a wonderful family club, a community club, that's not just a men's team, but, you know, with our women's teams, with you know, youth teams, kids teams, those sorts of things, with the facilities being used by the community throughout the week. And, but, you know, we're a community club for now and for the future.
Well, it's been fantastic to hear your side of the story, Math, and also you know, get to understand the intricacies and the reasons why everybody needs to come together and move forward for the sake of football. So, Math Pickup, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and best of luck with the plans for the amalgamation. And
hopefully wonderful. We'll speak to you again very soon. Thank you very much, Tim. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Now, I mentioned in my interview just there with Math Pickup from Bury FC about the forthcoming non-league day. So let's stick with that topic now. As non-league fans, I don't need to sell the concept to this audience. We've covered it every year and more. We've spoken many times with founder James Doe about this simple idea that even he admits was a simple idea. It's changed non-league football for the better. But I wanted to get my next guest on because I think not only is he a great advocate for the cause of Non-League Day, but because I think more people should probably know about his story and why Non-League Day has captured his heart too. Let's give a warm welcome to the Non-League Football Show to Non-League Day's Ian Bailey. Welcome, Ian.
Good afternoon and thank you.
Well, it's good. I think on your Twitter profile, you call yourself an apprentice groundhopper. But I think that may be a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
Slightly. I'm primarily a football fan and I do follow Chelsea for my sins, follow them home and away more these days in Europe. But then when not following Chelsea, I will go to a non-league game on a Saturday and have sort of got the bug of going to various grounds.
And why? I believe you're a member of the 92 club as well, and you have all those 92 league clubs. Someone has got a season ticket at Chelsea. You follow them, you know, across Europe. How did you get involved in Non-League Day?
I think I saw the campaign in its first couple of years and thought, that's a good idea, let's go along. I then spoke with, as it turned out, Mike Bailey at the time, who's no relation, his name's spelt differently, and James, and said, can I help? Because they were looking for volunteers. So that was some 9-10 years ago that I got involved with this and have sort of been part of the team ever since.
Yeah, part of the team. I mean, it's probably underselling yourself again, I think. Is it fair to say you're a fairly chief organiser? And I think also as well, from coming from your position, you know, being involved with a high-profile league club as well, I think you're a great ambassador for everything that non-league is about.
Well, thank you for that. I think there are others who sort of wave the flag quite vehemently, be it like Tony Incenzo and people like that who get, you know, he follows his club home and away and everywhere, yet finds time to do non-league grounds and has done God knows how many, you know, be it 3,000 or so grounds.
I've seen the book many times.
Yeah, I mean, you bump into various people as you go around these grounds. There's other, incentives or challenges for visiting various grounds. And when you've sort of seen 16, 17 teams in a league and you think, oh, there's only four or five more to do, it's sort of almost OCD to try and complete the league.
And so are you one of those, are you trying to work your way as well round non-league grounds as a groundhopper and ticking those off as well at certain levels?
I think the answer is yes. I mean, I've got one left to do in the National League North, which I'm trying to do on non-league day, and which will finish it down to that level. I've then working my way down and have done most of the grounds that I would like to do at levels 5 and 6 in the southeast. So yes, it's getting there.
So it sounds like you've got your plans for Saturday the 25th of March, non-league day this year. What other sort of events have clubs come to you, and leagues as well, asking you to help promote and get out there? I know you've got the match finder on the website and that sort of thing, but are there any novel things that are happening this year on non-league day?
There's, as usual, the vast variety of things happening across the leagues of clubs doing numerous things, be it, wear a football shirt of a certain club and get in for a reduced price, be it cheap admission for children, cheap admission for season ticket holders of certain clubs. All of these really sort of crop up on Twitter. The other one that's come to pass recently is Essex Senior League, who have decided to, in conjunction with clubs, I hope, move some kickoffs around. So they've got game on Friday night at three locations, I think. They've got three different kickoff times at Saturday at various games, and then games on the Sunday as well. So I think they're almost challenging people to visit five games over the weekend.
So non-league day really is, it's non-league weekend and beyond as well, because it's not just the 25th. Some clubs I know, they haven't got a home game that weekend, but they're arranging their own piece of the jigsaw, running events, offers and that sort of thing, to the nearest home game to that date.
Yes, there are games on the Friday night. There are games on the Sunday. I've got a game hopefully lined up Friday night and then one Saturday. I may do one Sunday. We'll see what happens.
And again, I'd always encourage you, even if your club's not doing anything per se, as a fan, there's probably something that you can do. Just bring a couple of mates down to your local non-league club.
Yes. I mean, you can do various levels, be it, National League, you're going to pay some sort of £20, £25 for a ticket, down to your local Step 7, Step 8 club, where you might have to pay £3. You can have a drink in the ground. You can take your dog to most grounds. You can, take your mates. You can walk round. You're not stuck in a seat like you are at a Premier League or a Championship ground.
I have to say, that is one of my favourite things about non-league football. And one of the things I don't even like watching National League football for sometimes, because I don't know, I almost feel like a captured lion. I do love the ability to wander around and just sort of, look to see how other grounds are formed, and also get a smile of different people as walk around. And I say it's not just the Saturday non-league day this year, because it's also not just the UK really this season as well. We've also got a Spanish link up this season.
Athletic Bilbao are arranging an event in their locality. Athletic are a sort of one-off club, really, because they only ever sign players who are born in the Bilbao region. They don't have any, for want of a better word, foreign players, and that includes areas of Spain. And they're arranging, I think it's in September, that they're doing an event of various clubs.
I think it's the 9th and 10th of September, isn't it? I think it's sort of looking ahead.
Yes. So they're going to try and arrange games and promote events that are, as they are, a community club, for want of better words, even in La Liga.
And it is, we always talk about, we've spoken about already on this show this week, about the non-league family that we've got. And there's some quirky things about us non-leaguers. We love a hard copy of a programme, and electronic copies, they're fine, but, they're still... I still like a bit of paper to thumb there every now and then. And am I right in saying, did I see some badges for non-league day now in circulation as well?
There are some badges, although they are very rare and hard to find. And I'm the sole distributor of them. Courtesy of Guerrilla Badges, we have some on order at the moment, and I have some stock coming, although it will be after non-league day. But I'm happy to sell those. And the money we raise goes to Prostate Cancer UK. Last year, we raised, from the sale of badges alone, some £300, which was sent straight on to them after the event. And we're probably, if not the same, a bit more this season.
Yeah, it's always great to have that charity link up. And just gives an extra special reason to enjoy non-league day. Obviously, I'm sure your inbox is now going to be overflowing with requests for badges. obviously, remind people where they can find out more about Non-League Day, Match Finder as well, that's on the website.
Yes, nonleagueday.co.uk is the website. If you want badges, you need to get in touch with me, which you can do via Twitter, or if you go to at nonleagueday.co.uk, they will, you know, their Twitter handle will reach me because it will be passed on. Or if you want to contact me direct, it's on Twitter, IBCFC61.
Good stuff. Well, Ian Bailey, I'm pleased that we finally got your voice out there as well. You're sort of like one of those hidden mice that do all the work and never get the praise. So, a big hat tip for all the work you've done over the years with Non-League Day and everybody else involved in Non-League Day as well, because it really has put Non-League on the map and made a difference to Non-League as well as, you know, prostate cancer and the charities and that sort of thing. It is something that even people that aren't non-league fans remind me of, that non-league day is coming up, and as if I wouldn't know that, but it does mean that it's in the public consciousness. So Ian Bailey, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Enjoy Non-League Day, and we'll speak to you again soon.
And you, thank you very much.
Then to head on over to the Non-League Paper Tower. So it's a welcome back to the Non-League Show. Executive editor at the Non-League Paper there, Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, John.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Good, good, good. It's lots to get through, although I almost feel it's been a fairly quiet week in terms of big news in Non-League world. But let's start this week again with the National League. Wrexham without a game midweek. Notts County won there, so the gap closes to just a single point again. And Wrexham also have that one game in hand when we all get up and running again this weekend. As I said to Matt last week, though, it's now so close, I'm not even sure that Easter head-to-head game is going to be very decisive. This is likely to go down to maybe the final week.
Yes, I think it is. I mean, it was quite telling, wasn't it, on Tuesday night. You looked in at half-time and Notts County 0, Eastleigh 1. And I thought to myself, I wonder if it's just got to him a little bit too much. You know, I wonder if it's if this could be a defining evening in the championship race. But Notts County didn't come back with 3 second half goals and went 3-1 and pulled back to within a point again, and they just keep going, didn't they? They're both of them just absolutely relentless, and Corley Langstaff, I think, now 5 goals away from being. For being the National League top goal scorer, it's just incredible. And I think you're right. I don't think the Easter game between the two of them will have any bearing, I think, because there's going to be 2 or 3 games. I'm not quite too sure, but 2 or 3 games after that. And I think this could go right to the end. I think there'd be another couple of twists as well. Even though we say that Wrexham and Notts County are such great guns, there's a lot to play for in the National League at the moment. Plenty of playoff places. The relegation scrap is gripping, isn't it? I think that's going to go to the wire as well. So there's a lot of clubs who are playing for points, and I think there's a few twists and turns just yet. But the top two really are going to take some beating right now.
Yeah, I don't know what we talk about. And again, I just like to be honest. When they changed the playoffs and took it down to the 7th places, I wasn't a fan. But now you look every season, you've got the one going up, then the 6 for the playoffs, and then you've got the 4 going down. It's always so tough. The season doesn't end. It's not a write-off. You know, we are the middle of March. You know, in previous seasons, everybody just be playing out.
That's right. You just have to look at Grimsby Town last year, didn't they? I think they finished 6th. They had 3 playoff games, and I, like you, wasn't a fan really. I think it was Grimsby that turned me, because they played arguably the three toughest teams they could have faced in those playoffs, beat them all, and now look at them in League 2, and they're in their quarter final of the FA Cup. You know, which is absolutely incredible. You know, what a difference 12 months make, but. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it gives the likes of Bromley, Dagenham, Eastleigh have shot right in there. Basically, teams who are in mid-table still have something to play for. It really is so tight. And if you just put a little run together of about 4, 5, 6 unbeaten, then it makes a big, big difference. And as we're seeing from the likes of Eastleigh, who have crept in there, Bromley are on a decent little run at the moment, and Dagenham mentioned Dagenham earlier. They're thereabouts, even though they lost their top striker this week, which is a bit of a blow to them. But there's so many teams with so much to play for, and as I say, every game really and every weekend it seems to change, it's gripping, really, is every single week now.
It is tight, but of course, as we've said time and time again, Wrexham and Notts County, head and shoulders above everybody else. But still, as you say, like even on Tuesday, games are tight. They're just maybe having that little bit of extra in the second half to take them on. And again, I think it's half the time it's confidence, isn't it, that takes you there. But Notts County are, 30 points clear of seventh place easily at the moment. So I think that means both Wrexham and Notts County are, they're well clear of the chasing pack, but also secured their playoff spot. So, of course, both Wrexham and Notts County, they're going to be playing to win in every one of their games and trying to win that title. But do you think there's going to be something in those coaching plans to consider the playoffs, the quirks, the extra pressures that come with that? Or are they just going to be focusing on Plan A alone and getting that title?
Well, it's difficult because obviously with the one up, they both can't do it. And I think if you were Notts County fan in particular, with that, with that having played that game more and being a point behind, it must be their mind thinking, okay, well, we might need to leave a little bit left in the tank. In case of a playoff push. Wrexham as well. I mean, Wrexham, only 12 months ago, Wrexham were red hot favourites for the playoffs. Had their hearts broken, and look at Hamilton and them in the trophy final 7 days later, and they ended up with nothing. So they're well aware of the heartbreak as well. And I think given the nature of football, given the nature of the National League this year, I think we would need to have one eye, I think, on a playoff push, as will a lot of clubs up and down non-league. They'll be thinking that playoffs is very much a possibility, except for perhaps Worksop Town, who I think are as good as champions already down at step four. I mean, what an achievement that is! But certainly in March. If you can be in a playoff picture, then it certainly gives your supporters something to look forward to.
Yeah, and that strength and the number of clubs are pushing for the playoffs. Yeah, both Wrexham and Notts County have tough away games this weekend. County, they go to Barnet. Wrexham go to Bromley on Saturday. Both of those, of course, have their own playoff aspirations. I think they've both got, 12 games left as well for those clubs. So they'll be looking to put a run together. And then plenty of other clubs. You mentioned Eastleigh with aspirations, of course. Boreham Wood as well. They're silently making their play as well. I think it's 5 clean sheets in a row for them and Nathan Ashmore between the sticks. It puts them in fifth place.
Yes, that's another club I meant to mention. Yeah, Boreham Wood has an excellent point, 5 clean sheets. And Nathan Ashmore, I personally believe is the best goalkeeper in the National League, is really making a name for himself, isn't he? And Boreham Wood have just done things quietly, haven't they? They're very good at that. Luke Garrard is very good at that. He doesn't make any noises, and they just sort of keep pootling along, and with little 1-0 wins, they're never going to smash teams 4-5-0, or very rarely they smash teams 4-5-0, and they always go sort of under the radar, and they've done it again, haven't they? And they're going to be that's not a nice place to go for a playoff. If they can edge themselves in there, then they're going to give themselves one hell of a chance. And it'd be great to see a likes of Boreham Wood in there, although I think there need to be a few changes down there if they were going to consider a football league, because they're going to need to try and find a way of getting a few people through the turnstiles, I think. But certainly on the field, there is they've earned their place there, and as I say, 5 clean sheets on the trot at this stage of the season is very, very impressive.
Yeah, looking at that National League table, it stands out that only Wrexham and Notts County have less defeats in the league this season than Boreham Wood. So Wrexham and Notts County both lost 2 games apiece. Then it's Boreham Wood with 7. And then I think we've got Woking with 9, Chesterfield with 10, that are also up there as well. But I think that's a telling figure in that defeat column. And also, as you say, who'd want to draw them then in the playoffs when you know that they're very difficult to beat throughout the season?
That's right. And then they've just shown in the FA Cup, haven't they, the last 3 years, just how difficult they can be on a one-off big game. They seem to know how to up the ante, both in certain times of the season or for big individual games. And that's football league clubs who thought they were going to go to Bournemouth and beat them in the FA Cup ended up with egg on their faces, didn't they? Even Bristol Rovers in League One, Bournemouth showed them just what they're capable of, and now they're doing it in the National League. I've always been a little bit critical of the way that they've gone about their league form since the last 2 years in their FA Cup campaigns. That their league form has always taken its toll on the league form a little bit, and they've fallen away. But now it looks as though they've got the ingredients just right now. And they've had an excellent FA Cup campaign. That's over now. That's done. Now they're focusing fully on the playoffs, and they're playing extremely well.
Yeah, no midweek at all in the National League this year. So you mentioned Macaulay Langstaff. He's on 36 goals, looking for that Ricky Miller 40-goal league record. I mean, who knows? He might get that this Saturday. But, of course, Langstaff's also part of Tuesday night's England v Wales game at Altrincham.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's something to look forward to. Paul Fairclough has announced his 16-man squad. Obviously, last week it was the 25-man provisional squad. He's rounded that down now to 16, which was a tough job because I thought your squad was excellent, full of players who have had excellent seasons in the National League. So to whittle down 25 to 16 in those circumstances is very difficult. But I think the 16 has got a very, very strong. And obviously, they're playing against a Wales team that I know all about. Lost 4-0 this time last season. So they got a bit of a revenge mission on their hands. And I spoke to Paul last week, and he was very, very well aware of that. He told me that the defeat still hurts him, and that he wants to. He appreciates it is a difficult time of the season, and that's why he's gone with the system of one player per National League team plus the Worthing goalkeeper who didn't quite make it to the 16, but the fact he's only chosen one player per club, I think, is very respectful to the National League managers, and I think it's all gone down pretty well, and the side he's got is very, very talented indeed. And that'd be a good game up there in Altrincham on Tuesday night. It'd just be great if you're not doing anything and fancy going to watch a decent game of football, then that will certainly be the place to be on Tuesday.
Yeah, indeed. You touched on it a little bit earlier. Dagenham losing their star player, their star striker earlier on the week, and links up with Macaulay Langstaff, I guess, this weekend at Notts County.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, Junior Morias. Junior Morias, obviously coming from Dagenham and to an already star-studded Notts County attack, isn't he? With the likes of Lemon High Evans they brought in, and Ruben Rodriguez obviously still there, Kedwin Scott and that man Langstaff. What a fierce strike force that is. I mean, this is a team who are looking at. We're looking at Football League, I think, I believe, for next season. And Junior Morias is someone, obviously, they pinpointed as someone who's performed well against them in the past. He was part of the Dagenham team that beat them not too long ago. But he's been at Dagenham for a couple of years. He's a fans' favourite there. And so, you know, a couple of Dagenham fans not particularly chuffed with that. And, slightly worrying signs, I think, now at Dagenham. They've lost, I think, three strikers now, three of their top strikers, and they're a little bit concerned as to the direction of the club. But I'm sure they've got a plan in place. Obviously, they changed their manager recently too, haven't they? But Junior Morias going to Notts County, yeah, that's that's a pretty worrying statistic for defenders who are going to be coming up against them in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, as you mentioned, change of manager there. Didn't actually. Again, it seems that all the action seems to happen on a Friday nowadays. After we've already hit your ears, but Ben Strevin's going in there. He's had a bit of time, I guess, to reflect before he gets back into management. But an ex-player knows the club well. But as you say, what are they, 12th in the table? They've got ambitions, but with more strikers going out the door, how far does that ambition go?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Personally, I think Ben Strevens is a great fit for them. As you say, he's a bit of a fan's favourite there before. He's got managerial experience at Eastleigh. Did a very good job at Eastleigh. Knows the league extremely well. But you do worry what you're coming into, losing your best striker within the first week. I'm sure that was a deal that was. That was pinpointed long before that. It's not something that happens overnight, a big signing like that. So I'm sure he would have been well aware of that. You just wonder, don't you? Because Dagenham were one of the teams that sort of people were looking over their shoulder at. And at one point, they were going good guns. And I don't quite know what happened with Darren McMahon. But they dispensed with his services. And then Paul McCullum went and they lost... the other lad in January, didn't they? Went to Burton Albion. He was Walker. He was their top striker. So all of a sudden, you know, since the turn of the year, they've lost their three top strikers. And Iniesta has come in, and Iniesta knows where the back of the net is. And he's moved from Aldershot. That's been a hit so far, but you're asking a lot of one man really to score them the goals to propel them in the playoffs. So I'm not quite sure where they're at the moment, but I'm sure there's a plan in place. Whether it'll be this year or not for them, I'm not so sure. But Ben Strevens, for me, I think is a excellent appointment for them, and wish him all the best.
Yeah, and the other big managerial change, I guess, that we missed at the end of last week was Paul Doswell at Havant Waterlooville making that move upstairs, as it's said, to become director of football, and Jamie Collins becoming the manager. I think there might be a touchline ban that maybe sort of influenced Paul's decision there. But that's another club with a depth in coaching and managerial experience, isn't it? Just at National South level.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, when Paul Doswell went to Havant, lots of eyes were. Eyebrows are raised. You know, this is a guy who's achieved tremendous success at Sutton. Also has decent backing behind him as well. So when he went to Havant, as I say, there was a lot of people who assumed that success would follow him, and it didn't quite work out for them last year, did it? They sort of just missed. Just missed out on the playoffs, but had a decent season so far. Just fallen away a little bit as well the last couple of weeks. So I don't know if that was behind the timing of the timing of him going upstairs. I wonder if that was the case. I'd be a little bit surprised because Havant are still in the playoff places and they're still quite nicely primed, aren't they? But but Jamie Collins, to come in for his first job, obviously he's. He's been there, done it with Sutton, among many other clubs. As a player, he was excellent. So big job for him now to sort of pick up the pieces of the last couple of weeks and try and launch a playoff push. I'm sure Paul will be right behind him in everything he does. But it must admit that was a little bit of a surprise to me that they felt that. The time was right to make that change, but I'm sure Paul won't be too far away. He loves a piece of the action, as Paul Doswell, and he won't be too far away, I'm sure.
Yeah, elsewhere as well, we saw Mark Clifford go at Basford United, replaced by a man. Well, we mentioned him a couple of weeks back when he left Belper Town, and you said it wouldn't be long before he'd be out of the game for long. And Steve Kittrick is back in a job, but yeah. The Southern League Central, though, that's new to him with all his past success coming in the Northern Premier League and National League, but a great appointment.
Yes, very much so. As we said a few weeks ago, Steve Kitcrick, so his CV speaks for himself at that level, at step three level, albeit, as you say, mostly in the Northern League with the various sides. But no, a new challenge for him. Obviously, he's gone to a club who are sort of looking for the kind of success that really they haven't really had in the past. So it's a big new challenge. I'm not sure. I don't think they've ever been a step two before. So you know maybe that could be a long time goal for him. And if that was the goal, then Steve Kitcher's your man. I think he's an excellent manager at that level, and you know, knows how to grind out results. Very, very good contacts as well, and I think he'll do an excellent job, and good luck to him. Good to see him back.
Yeah, and one of those other changes this week, we saw Matt Longhurst. Well, he jumped off the merry-go-round after a very short ride. Just 1 month in the job at Burgess Hill Town, and I believe it's a change in location for his real job means that he's had to hand over the reins to current captain Lewis Taylor. And I think it's just a reminder that as much as we expect these people to try and run through walls for their clubs, real life sometimes gets in the way.
Yes, that's right, yeah. We all got jobs elsewhere, haven't we? We all have a life outside football, and it is a reminder, really. These days, you're not even at step four, step five level. You're not taking over a football team. It's a lot more than that. You know, you're talking. You're on the phone constantly, all the time, and the pressures of Homer Burgess Hill down the foot of the table. It would be catastrophic if a club that size slips into step five, and you know, obviously that's in their thoughts as well. So you know, with that comes a lot of pressure as well. And maybe if Matt thought that he couldn't give the club the kind of commitment that they deserved, and you know, he's probably right to do so. But yeah, it does sort of bring it home, really, that you know, this is a it's a very high pressure environment, and you know, anyone who steps up to manage a football club at any level of non-league football is really no walk in the park. And I think he's probably bowed down now before the end of the season, before it gets too much. And you know, if I just hope that you know, too many managerial changes don't derail them too much.
Yeah, and that's the case. And we mentioned the vacancy at Sporting United as well previously, and Elliot Sandy, a striker there, has gone in as interim manager. But I'd imagine Tuesday night,
first game he had as well, didn't he?
Well, I'd imagine I'd been on anything he could have envisaged, really. For those that don't know, a 9-0 win at Daventry Town, a hat-trick for Dylan Edge in the 10-minute spell just before the end. Only 62 the official attendance there. It's got to be pragmatic about that, Daventry. Sporting up to third, poor Daventry. They've had lots of players recently depart. They're second from bottom in that Northern Premier Midlands division at step four.
That's right. I mean, if I was Elliot Sandy, I'd resign now. I think that's a record that will never get beat, wouldn't it? One win from one game, 9-0. Yeah, I mean, he's obviously walked into a job where there's the success on the doorstep. I mean, they're actually having an excellent season, aren't they? They're thereabouts in the playoff places. Elliot Sandy's been around non-league football for a long time. He knows he knows the ropes. Obviously, I'm pretty sure it's his first managerial post or first sort of coaching post. So, yeah, he's got in there, and really, it's kind of no lose. I see they've made a couple of high profile signings this week, and to bolster them up. And I think the lad Warburton coming from step three scored on his debut, and guys like him at the helm, you know, that's really giving you a decent backbone for a playoff push. And really, if you had to pick your opponents in the playoffs, you wouldn't really want to pick them at the moment, because they're obviously, as you say, they're revitalised and re-energised, and
under a new manager and new players. They've obviously got one goal in mind, and they're winning 9-0 away from home. They're not a bad side, are they?
No, it's a double-edged sword, football. It doesn't matter whether you're a fan, you're a manager, you're a chairman, or you have your highs and lows. But I guess last weekend sort of summed up non-league football, I think, for me. Where, like, watching the trophy and VARs results coming in, all those VARs games going to penalties, probably a bit of a headache for you guys putting the paper together. But we had some great ties in the FA Trophy FA VARs quarterfinals last weekend. Draws this weekend for the semi-finals, the one-legged semi-finals this year to be played on Saturday the 1st of April. Those clubs that are left in this competition now, I'm excited for them, so they must be, almost wetting themselves with glee that they're one game away from Wembley.
Yeah, I've literally just come off the phone to the Corsham Town manager, Kieran Baggs. He just can't believe it. He's on cloud nine. He's seen one four penalty shootouts this year to get to this stage, and he's rubbing his hands with glee. He can't wait. Although he's got a very, very tough home fixture against Ascot United to come in the semis. But I mean, yeah, it was a logistical nightmare for us at the paper on Saturday. But it really was incredible to watch six of the eight quarterfinal ties going to penalties. And we had a discussion in the office as to sort of whether there was a reason behind that. You know, it's the fact that that there's no extra time anymore, and there's no replays, and it's literally just a 90-minute game. Does that alter the tactic of especially the away team? Do they sit back and hold back, and sort of knowing that their best route could be through penalties? I don't know. There could be something in that. We have had a lot of letters this week, actually, from fans saying that that they think extra time at least should be employed at this stage, and I think that's a valid point as well. I don't think anyone would advocate replays anymore. A second leg possibly, but I think there's something in that. The fact that these ties are now just 90 minutes, and I wouldn't mind betting that of the four ties remaining in the VARs and the trophy, that there'll be at least one or two more penalty shootouts. But it's gripping stuff, and it's going to be some either way, whatever happens, there's going to be some good fairy tale stories, isn't there, at Wembley?
Yeah,
in May.
I do wonder then whether the fact that we haven't got the big name clubs, like we mentioned earlier, that Notts County, Wrexham, they seem to be down and out at half time, or certainly off the pace, and then come back into the game and pick up at the end of it. Whether those, when games go into extra time, whether the bigger clubs maybe have the extra legs to be able to sort of afford them to get those results, and that's why we've maybe got some of the lesser known, names like Gateshead and Barnet and Altrincham and Halifax, they're not less, small named in non-league terms, but certainly in the FA Trophy, they're not the teams you'd expect to be in the semi-finals if you were predicting it at the start of the season. Maybe that's it. Maybe that it is the strength of the first 11 and a couple of subs match up very well in the National League.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, certainly if you look at the two games In the trophy that did go to penalties, I think you could say that they were both won by the higher ranked side. Gateshead taking two penalties by an excellent Farsi Celtic team who gave it their all, and unfortunately for them, Gateshead managed to get over the line, and then Barnet at Maidstone after an exciting 2-2 draw, and they went to penalties, and Barnet came through that, and I think this is probably what we were saying sort of early part of the season when Wrexham, Chesterfield, and Notts County went out. It's a great opportunity now for the likes of those teams in that next section just below them to really make a name for themselves. And in that section, we're looking at Barnet and FC Halifax and Altrincham. And what an opportunity it is for them, and obviously Gateshead as well. Great opportunity for all four of them you know, to get to a Wembley final. A really, really good day out for their fans, and yeah, and play on the biggest stage of them all. And I think certainly when it comes to quarterfinal and semi-final, the cream usually rises to the top. And I think in this particular incident, I think having that players with that little bit more nous in a big game situation did make the difference.
Yeah, and one thing I just quickly touched on was the National League TV pilot test event started this week. We had on Tuesday night one of the games, Bath City, Dulwich Hamlet, which was a free entry or you know, pay what you will type game. Didn't seem to affect the attendance there of 904, that you could watch the game streamed on the TV. Obviously, we've got other games coming up this weekend and midweek. I'll be interested to see how that affects attendances. It doesn't seem to have had an impact with these initial games this week, but I'd be also interested to see what the viewing figures were like. Is this an opportunity for non-league to pick up extra audience?
That's right. In particular, for those step two clubs, as you mentioned, Bath City and Dulwich. Dulwich are probably the exception to the rule, given their huge fan base. But certainly lots of Bath and Chelmsford. And Chelmsford are playing my local team, Farnborough. And you know, it's a great opportunity for clubs like that. Who, as far as I'm aware, I don't think Farnborough have ever had a league. Mm. A league tie ever shown on television, probably won't likely to either after this. But it's an unbelievable opportunity for those kind of clubs. Obviously, there's some big test events as well in the North Division, and it could go either way. I think you could probably get fans who might have gone along and put their feet up for the night, or it could generate extra. Extra support from elsewhere. I think the National League TV so far has been a huge success. I think it's just what non-league football or the National League needed, especially at a time when match of the day weren't exactly great.
Yeah, I think it was almost perfect timing, wasn't it? I mean, the other game this week was, as you mentioned, in the North. It was that. You know, title aspiration game of Brackley Town and Kingsling Town, which ended in a 1-1 draw. Again, I think nearly 900 as the attendance there. So it's
fantastic.
It was a great shot, particularly when we got non-league day coming up. You've mentioned a few of the things that you've got coming up in this weekend's paper. Is there anything else that we need to be aware of or should be looking out for?
I think we're coming out. Obviously, it's a busy paper. We've got England C stuff. I think we've got Matt Badcock has spoken to Joe Sabara of Solihull Moors, who's the only player in that England C club in that England C squad to have been capped. So we've got a nice interview with him. We've got plenty of Vars and trophy semi-final previews. Non-league day, lots of non-league day snippets, and we're going to sort of go around clubs and asking what they're doing for non-league day. Plenty going on. We've also spoken to Jeff Stelling about his latest exploits in helping to raise money for prostate cancer, and the fact that we could be actually seeing Jeff Stelling in non-league circles next year with Hartlepool, even though he hopes that won't be the case. So yeah, there's plenty going on. We've been down at Western Supermare. We got a nice piece with them as well, and we're also flagging up our National Game Awards as well, which are in 2 months' time. Which obviously you'll be coming to, Tim. And so you have to get your get your drinking boots on, and we'll be celebrating another year of non-league football, and inviting fans and everyone to put in their votes for who they think deserves an NGA. So yeah, we're officially launching them this weekend as well.
The proper sniffing distance at the end of the season. I don't want to think about it really, because it'll come around far too quickly. But John Couch, once again, thank you for all of your help. Have a great
Thank
week
you.
And we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you. Cheers, Tim.
And that then is the end of the show, folks. Thanks as ever to all of my guests. Thank you to everybody for listening. Remember, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And you can find us every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, also Castbox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic via your smart speakers and all good. And some pretty mediocre ones to podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe. Enjoy your football. Thank you. And goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.